Well, we're live now. I'm interrupting this festival. In case you've heard me say we're live on a rerun, does your watch say 10:15 somewhere? California time, 10:14? 13 and a half to be exact. That means we're live, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
What day is it? One never knows, does one? I'm very disturbed. Very, very disturbed. Somebody's got their microphone too loud. You got earphones, guys. I shouldn't have to hear the director clear over here to my desk. I'm very disturbed. Reservations for Sunday are at 6:10. And it's past Wednesday noon. Every time we have a Sunday night service, what are you spoiled brats trying to do? Kill your pastor? I'm supposed to do the Sunday service, get ready for Sunday night, and do 3 hours on Sunday afternoon? Because if I don't, you won't make the reservations. And it blows my mind because the telephones work no matter what. I know part of the problem, though I wasn't here Sunday, and I may be stating something that wasn't true this Sunday, but part of the problem is that when we have the Sunday night service and don't have a live festival and people are planning, and the same is true of Voices of Faith, they've been to the service Sunday morning and they're going Sunday night, and so they're not as many Voices of Faith normally on Sunday afternoon. Same words. Why are you such a spoiled brat? This ministry does not exist for you. This is not a church that caters to the congregants and does what they're supposed to do. I teach you and you've got all week long to apply the teaching to your life and your progress in faith and your problems. We are not running a spiritual clinic for Christian infirms, retards, and selfish Christian psychos. I came to town asking for the uncommon man. I don't make altar calls. I don't provide substitute social life for Christians that don't know how to relate to reality. I don't provide a reversal of what God did, which was to incarnate himself in flesh and bring the gospel. You're to come Sunday and engage in the hearing of faith and then practice it. If you've got an independent ministry, get out. You've got an independent life, I teach you how to live it according to God's word. But if you're in this church, your ministry is helping get the word out. That's the sum total of why you're in this church. To receive teaching, to direct your life, doing what you and God work out, and tithe your time to supporting this ministry. If you haven't got that straight, go find another church. I can live with 610 if that's all we got that understand what I teach. But twice that are sitting out there and I'm still talking because this pastor feels the spirit is willing, the flesh is weak, and you've got to have your fleshly ass kicked ever so often. It's ridiculous. You've been told over and over again, if there's ever a time, you should double up your reservation time, speed it up, do extra effort to get it in. It's the Sunday we have a miracle service. Are you just plain stupid or too rebellious to make it to heaven? I had a letter this week from a brothers that started listening in San Francisco. They weren't interested in the religion, they listened to other things. Constitution, law, other teaching. They moved down to Hollywood, life progressed till they had a problem, and they started listening to the teaching, and their life was changed. And for 20 years, they're way back in the second thousand of the king's houses. They were commenting that they were grateful for a pastor that teaches them and opens their eyes and gives them the word, and as they said, there's never been a message they've listened to that something in it didn't hit them right where they sat in a way that they could use it with the problems they face. But they also had kind words because they said, we recognize that we're at war with the devil and that you have the role as a general as well as a pastor. One of them was a supply chief in the Navy. And he tells of a 30-month tour of duty with a little red-headed captain who had a reputation for fixing commands. He was assigned to his 30-month duty went into the captain's office for his welcome aboard, and he thought he'd get a welcome aboard, and it's nice to have you, and the captain would share with him some of his plans and objectives. And we sat down, the captain was rocking back and forth from his chair, in his chair, on his desk, looked at him, as he described it, like he was a piece of vomit on the captain's rug. And he said, the only, and I can't say what the captain said to him, the only bleeping reason you're here is to make sure I get my bleeping parts. Two people had committed suicide under his watch. People who wanted to do things their way, and as this man said, too much ego to do the job, he made up his mind that he wouldn't ask why, he would make sure this bleeping captain got his bleeping parts. He went on to say, it never changed. He thought somewhere he'd get more compliments. Never changed. After 30 months, the last thing the captain said to him as he brought him in his office, you're the best supply officer I've ever had in 27 years. But he said he never gave me a hint of that for 27 years. He says, those of us that made it through his command all had one conclusion. If war in the Persian Gulf had erupted, we wanted to be on the ship where he was captain because we knew that gave us the best chance of coming home alive. He then went to George Patton. Very few people talked about how nice and pleasant it was to serve under Patton. But everybody wanted to be under his command in war because it was the best chance of getting home alive. And he went on to say, thank you for wanting me, in essence, he had more words, to be alive over there. We are moving ahead, and I am very disappointed in a lot of the old guard people. Some of them sit on the front rows of the cathedral. Oh, they applaud, they stand, they whistle. But they long ago abandoned their first love. They haven't listened when I said, the older the saint, the tougher the trial. I look at some that I remember how they looked when they first came. And their life was changed, like this Navy man who wrote. Now, they settle in, pay tithe, and drink in the teaching. The volunteers are stepping forward, and some of you people are going to lose your crown and be left out. I'm going on. You ought to be ashamed of yourself to the core of your being. As many cues as I have given you, that this always happens when we have a miracle service. So why don't you just sit down in front of the TV tonight and look up and say, God, I want to thank you for the opportunity of discouraging Pastor from ever having a miracle service because of the price that we make him pay. Because we won't make our reservations unless he's there on Sunday afternoon and pounding on us. Now, you better get this out of between you and me and between you and God and your eternal position, including that of your family. How many of you looked at the King's House 1 on Sunday night and saw the difference and the change and everything that was there, including putting fabric on the bleachers? My wife sees and asks, and I say, go for it. I've had staff people I've sent to these locations for years who know my standards. I don't go there before the service. I haven't changed. I'm no more willing to do the job and respond to the request for POs or expense now than I was because my wife is putting them in than I was before. Nobody would come to me. They didn't care, which is why a lot of them are gone. I grieved for a week over what I had to do to people who subsequently apologized for their foolish self-serving ways and lack of faith on Sunday with the so-called medical emergency. I repeat again, not very many pastors could have survived a reaction to a disobedient act and no one speaking up until they are busted and then in essence creating the frame of reference. Well, fool, why are you getting so upset? We have a medical emergency. We had a bigger emergency earlier. Hold your hand up and say, someone in this church, a 22-year-old King's House, is having a heart attack. I wasn't even preaching yet. You ought to get out of this church and leave if you think you got a pastor that wouldn't respond. If some member of this church says he's having a heart attack while I'm preaching. Well, I had to peel the onions off of self-serving ego. I didn't have to, for the person who wrote this letter. That's why they told the story about the captain. And they nailed it. It was ego talking. Self-serving defense justification. I grieved for a week. I couldn't believe the crowd that was there Sunday morning. And all the time this letter of encouragement sat over there, looked at by two of my staff people, who treated it as paper. For the first time, my wife went to sort the mail today, came back running with it, with tears running down her cheek. I called the guys in who sorted the mail, some of the old guard that still remain. She said, "Don't do it. You're going to waste your time. It's just paper to them. Take the money out, take it to the bank." Well, some of you know-it-alls out there, and some of you gossip containers that have listened to failing people justify their failure, what you see is what is. I can be the kindest person on this earth and the most forgiving, but I will not tolerate excuses from lying soldiers who make a commitment to get in the battlefield and they're more interested in serving themselves than they are God, this church, or me. And I'm at least honest enough to tell you, going out the gate, follow me as I follow Christ. If you've got to make your own decisions, get out and find another place to make them. Make your own decisions in your life. I fight for your right to do that. But on my watch, I repeat what I've said 100 times or more. None of you will stand at the judgment seat of Christ and give account for this congregation, including your miserable souls. I will. And I care more about that than you liking me. And when I get convinced that someone's spirit is no longer willing and they're just conning me, it only takes 1 second for me to end it. I still have the faint belief you're dumb sheep and your spirit is willing. Now I only have about a third of the voices of faith that are necessary to fill all these phones, and two-thirds of them are not busy. Now, there's nobody watching on Channel 38. I'll be delighted to find that out tonight and just cancel it. And there's plenty of people watching on shortwave and satellite, and I understand you pick your times because you can listen 24 hours a day. You can set your recording machines. But we got a battle going here, and I want everybody anywhere in this country, whether you can come Sunday or not, get on these telephones and get faith in this room. And if you don't understand what I said earlier, that letter I got could have lifted my faith and spirits unbelievably. Bad people opening the mail didn't care. Just threw it in the stack. My wife discovered over some kind of rules always used against me. The rules that make it hard on the staff people, the old staff, they can immediately forget those. The ones that make their job easier, man, they got those down pat. Don't go near Doc's set. That means like the director's booth, except someone that's authorized to do it. Like a few weeks ago, the read mail was being sent to the place where there was no reader. Supposed to read the mail, sort it for me to read on my set. And because they always sent read mail somewhere and the readers were long gone, they still send them to the... But there's no readers. Ten boxes of read mail. And my wife's starting to sort. All it took was somebody that cares. We're not supposed to come near my set unless you're cleared to do it. And the last one that was cleared left, and in spite of the rule that any time, you know, I use a phrase, move the toilet and dump on the floor. The toilet's gone, so it's where it always was. So we keep doing. So the one's gone that was cleared, nobody's going to raise their hand and say, well, this person that is gone used to do this. This set hadn't been dusted or cleared for 2 years. Stuff piled up. You used to couldn't hardly see me here. Remember that? For the stacks. Thank God we're getting people to care. I can't be appreciative enough for the volunteers that worked and made the miracle service go more smoothly than any other one. So the devil won by giving us a bad recording. Because one sync cable wasn't connected properly. And I'm still having to train new people. You've got to pay attention. You've got to care. And if you're here full of fear, and the only reason you're here is to avoid getting in trouble, get out. I will not start another generation as... I went through a considerable number of the female gender before I found the right one. I had one more trip. I got one more long trip with God. I ain't doing it with a bunch of fear-mongering, ego-serving, non-enthusiastic cheerleaders willing to risk getting their tail chomped in order to learn without excuses or defense. I want enthusiasm and faith around me. Fear does not come from God. And fear and faith cannot dwell in the same house. And what time I'm afraid, I will trust in the Lord. And you will come here with some trust in the pastor to discern your motives, and don't bore me with your testimonies to it. And you're going to start caring and paying attention and raising your hand and asking the one question, does Doc know this? Because there were people in the back of the truck and other people that could have seen what was happening from the main camera that was used while I was teaching. So I'll live with that. We still had a better performance with none of the so-called experts that no one took the trouble to even ask the question. Is there anyone on the new staff that even knows how to hook up the truck at King's Osborne? Nobody. Nobody said a word to me. Or to Melissa. And the new director, Rick, and the new people in the studio here, they had never set up the truck at King's House 1. And one of the old guard members that I had terminated, the Sunday, remember the guy that was terminated for leaving his post, remember that, a few weeks back? That was the man at King's House 1. Without asking, he had decided to paint the side of the church behind the truck. Wrong color. Didn't ask, didn't say a word. And disengaged all the cables. They were just hanging from the balconies. And outside engineers, because the old guard was like the old guard that was here when I came here, the genius that knew how to, that you couldn't function at Faith Center 28 years ago without the engineer, the chief engineer, who's the genius. Well, he was a genius because he wired the transmitter and nobody else knew which wire went to what. Not a cable at King's House 1 labeled, which is the way everything's been for a long time. Well, we know. You don't bother to tell the old man. He leave him out of the loop. So nobody knew how to hook the truck up, which cables went to the uplink in order to broadcast live. But we got it done. And we could have broadcasted live. We chose not to. But then the recording, because of one cable, and I feel we're winning the victory when the devil attacks equipment. You have no idea what we waded through Saturday night when a film company illegally trespassed on the parking lots that we own. And we're there till 4 in the morning Saturday night. And a rent-a-cop that they had was trying to treat us like the trespassers. Oh. I will get justice. And the cannons were loaded today, and some of them parked in place. That didn't change what happened Saturday night. I'm honest with this congregation. You will share in eternity every reward of this ministry worldwide. I remember preaching from Anguilla remote one Sunday. The Colossian letter and what Paul had to say about soldiers that were on their post, which is what he compared them to. You're not on your post. You weren't listening 5 minutes tonight anywhere in the world. You didn't know we got a crisis. So why are you sitting there like a gimlet-eyed lobster and not on the telephone? Get on the telephone. Make your reservations for the cathedral this Sunday. There's over 1,800 seats in that cathedral. And when I sat down here, 610 reservations. You might as well kiss the devil as to default on that responsibility. Get on the telephone. God knows what would happen to this church if you would ever, once for all, act like the war depends totally upon you and would cross that hurdle of a commitment to God. I will make my reservations before Wednesday noon. It's been a war for these many years. And what a disgrace. And what is going to land on you in judgment. That this 24-hour network that we pay and support, this festival, when it's finished, will run nonstop and all teaching will stop until you rebellious people, children of this age, I won't be told what to do. Well, my Bible tells me, after all the wondrous promises of Hebrews, of the much better way we have, obey those that have rule over you, for they watch for your soul. That has nothing to do with secular rule and what Caesar is involved in. Caesar doesn't watch for your soul. It's the authorities God has put in the church. His domata. 99% and more of those who have long since thrown in the towel on perfecting saints. Teleos is the word, bringing them to completion, keeping you going forward from faith to faith. You heap to yourselves teachers having itching ears who want to be loved and say what you like. It's an age that doesn't want anybody telling them what to do. prayer, giving, and obeying those that have rule over you. It's the three conclusions of Hebrews. And Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever to those that obey those that have rule over. We've had this war for years, and you forced me to come down here to get you to do what you know you should have already done. And then, because people in the luxury of 24-hour programming will pick their times and spread it through the 24 hours, and so all the teaching will have to stop now for however many days while this festival plays, until you do what you should have done before Wednesday of this day, before noon of this day. We're at 6:17, seven people. About 45 minutes has gone by. It's a disgrace. You better look in your soul and ask what you've done for God today, and start doing something. Get on the phone. You know, of late I've been expanding the writing on the board and the comparative sources of the word to include the Syriac and last Sunday the Aramaic. I'm going to read to you from Nehemiah 8. And all the people gathered themselves, they'd come back from Babylon now, and all the people gathered themselves together as one man into the street that was before the water gate. And they spake unto Ezra the scribe to bring the book of the law of Moses, which they had found, which the Lord had commanded to Israel. And Ezra the priest brought the law before the congregation, both of men and women, and all that could hear with understanding, upon the first day of the seventh month. And he read therein, before the street that was before the water gate, from the morning until midday, before the men and the women and those that could understand, and the ears of all the people were attentive unto the book of the law. And Ezra the scribe stood upon a pulpit of wood which they had made for the purpose, and these names, if I wanted to take the time to pull them apart, so speak of anticipation of what God does for the saints in what the New Testament calls the domata, the gift ministers to the church, apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. Ezra means help. Beside him stood Mattathiah, which means gift of Jehovah. Names like Urijah, light of Jehovah. Maaseiah, work of Jehovah. And Ezra opened the book in sight of all the people, for he was above all the people, and when he opened it, all the people stood up. So they read in the book in the law of God distinctly and gave the sense and caused them to understand the reading. That's where the Aramaic Targums began. All these people, after 70 years of bondage, no longer spoke Hebrew. They spoke Aramaic. And as they read the law from the Torah in Hebrew, they would do what I do on Sunday morning. I explain the meaning in English. They would explain it in Aramaic. I thought I'd read a little more about the Aramaic Targums in this, the text of the Old Testament by Ernst Wirthwein. It is known that in post-exotic Judaism, Hebrew ceased to be spoken as the common language and was replaced by Aramaic, which had become the official written language of the Western Persian Empire. And Babylon was part of the Western Persian Empire, west of the Euphrates. Hebrew was, of course, still understood and used in intellectual circles, especially among theologians. But for the larger part of the Jewish community, it became necessary to combine the usual scriptural lessons, which were read in Hebrew in the synagogue, which were read by Ezra that many years ago, as the people stood and listened, hungry for the word because they hadn't heard it. They didn't have those rolls in their scrolls in their possession, found and uncovered again as they came back. Read in Hebrew in the synagogue with a translation into Aramaic, a practice in Ezra's day carried forward. The translating was called Targem. The translator, Targumon. And the translation, Targum, Targums. Since the need was felt in an early date, the custom was old and certainly pre-Christian, back to Ezra, Nehemiah 8. In the worship service, the translation could be made only orally, as it was when Ezra did it. Not read from a scroll, that is, the translation. This was presumably to preserve its distinction from the truly sacred text, which was in Hebrew. The writing down of Aramaic translations was not forbidden, and the existence of written targums for study and for the training of translators by the beginning of the Christian era at the latest is no longer in question. It is told of Rabbi Gamaliel, the teacher of Paul, that when a targum of Job was placed before him, he spurned it and had it buried in a wall because the Hebrew Torah was sacred to him, to those Pharisees. Targums were in use even at Qumran, place of the Dead Sea Scrolls. But with their development from oral translations, it's only natural that the precise wording of the targums should differ from place to place. Just as I'm showing you the many different translations in many other languages, sometimes we'll have a word that doesn't have the same color and depth of meaning that the Hebrew word had, and they have to expand on it to explain it. While the Hebrew text in this normally accepted interpretation in Judaism remained authoritative, there remained the possibility of individual characteristics appearing in the form of words, extent of paraphrase, interpretation, representation, etc. Thus, there was not at first a single original standard and authoritative Targum text, but rather a whole series of different Aramaic versions. And to skip along, recensions begin to develop as they continue to perpetuate the Hebrew manuscripts. The Jewish rabbis begin to assemble all the various targums and begin to put together a common targum, the Palestinian targum, and then Pseudo-Jonathan targum, and then the Babylonian targums took shape, and there became eventually an official targum whose definitive wording was established in Babylon in the 5th century. Now, I could take a lot of time because we're continuing to assemble as I spread the Bible collection out and I'll spread it out to an Aramaic collection. We weren't ready for it yet. We don't have the space, as I've said, for all of the Bible collection that I have. But through these two prongs of recensions, primarily the Palestinian and the Babylonian, eventually the official Targum took shape that all the Hebrew scholars analyzing would agree, as they've wrestled with the English translations through many translations, that which is the best synthesis of the Targums that were taking the Hebrew scripture and putting it into the language of the people, Aramaic. As you look in the Bible collection's central theme that we have at the cathedral, we have a room of the book with the foundation that poured into, ultimately, the English translation that comes from Wycliffe, the Morning Star, who translated from the Latin, to the real father of the English Bible, Tyndale, through the various translations, up through the Geneva, to the King James, and then the translations have continued through the years as the manuscripts begin to compound and more were able to go back and get to the meanings of the words at the time they were uttered. And obviously these Targums, putting into another language the Aramaic, with multiple rabbis giving the sense of the Hebrew to their particular synagogue audience, and then assembled and brought together by rabbis who worshiped the law and worshiped the Torah to make sure that the Aramaic gave the best sense of the Hebrew, and those that were doing the recension of the Targums were analyzing translations into Aramaic that were using Hebrew manuscripts much older than the Masoretic text, which is the accepted text of the Hebrews today. That's the value of the Targums, the Aramaic scriptures, which I'm drawing from as I seek to pull apart these Old Testament words and put them into a meaning that elaborates, expands upon, gets at all the diverse meanings and the root meanings of the Hebrew text. The Syriac goes beyond the Old Testament and includes the New Testament and the Peshitta, but that's another subject, and I'll talk about it. But that's why the Targums and the Aramaic is important as I continue to pull apart these words of the Old Testament. Now get back on the phone and make your reservations. You know, as I referenced earlier, Jesus said of the disciples who failed him twice when he needed them to support him. Down through the eons of time, those three closest disciples that he took, didn't take all the disciples, took just the three closest ones up the Mount of Transfiguration. Oh, I'll bet that if they had known what was going to happen, they would have acted differently. But he just told them to watch and pray with him. And they went to sleep. And it's clear why he took them up there. It's always amazing to me that Jesus, in his emptying himself of some of his glory, actually needed moral support, faith support, and courage support. How would you like to stand in the eternities of time and know that Jesus needed you just to stay awake and be there for him? They went to sleep. And God had to send Elijah and Moses. And it's clear why he took them up there. Because when Peter woke up and got over his first fool statement, what they heard was Elijah and Moses talking to Jesus about his decease that was to come. Now you read the Gospels of his 33 years, the Gospels, two-thirds of them, occupy or concentrate on just 1 week, the last week of his life, that would follow that mountain experience. He had to get his courage up, and he had these old warriors talking to him about his decease to come. I mean, Elijah wanted to die and had to be straightened out by God. Moses missed the promised land. He was lucky he got this later trip in there. And they're there encouraging Jesus, which is what he took those three idiots that went to sleep up there to do. Moments come, but never come again. That's why I'm saying a lot of you older people in this congregation, you're like Ephesus. You've lost your first love. And you're going to lose it in the last lap of the journey and wipe out everything you've done. And the scripture says, as soon as he came down that hill, he straightway, steadfastly, set his face to go to Jerusalem. Moses and Elijah helped him set his face. Those three beloved disciples could have had that honor and that credit in eternity. They're doing it again in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he says, you couldn't watch for me 1 hour? They slept. Flesh. He said, the spirit's willing, flesh is weak. That's all that keeps me trying with some of you. When God releases me that the spirit's no longer willing, there's no reason to try. Just go on to other people. I ain't quitting. Cross that hurdle when we took this mountain. I expect the devil to fight. Some of you are going to see it pass by. We're still at 626. Most of the king's house has gone to bed. Not enough people up and watching tonight live to get the quota. We'll have to play this festival around the clock and catch them when they're not sleeping. That's the tragedy. Should have happened before Wednesday noon. This is the most ridiculous thing I have ever seen. As ridiculous as those dumb disciples sleeping. The opportunities missed. You're in a phone ringing now. You better get on the telephone. Now they're all sleeping. No sense trying to get any more reservation tonight, they're all sleeping. I don't know how to wake them up. You know how I complain about people not listening? And Ralph Nichols' studies on listening where he proved that the smarter you are, the worse the listener. And a moron can think 400 words a minute. Genius can think 700 to 1,000, maybe more. You got all that free time with your brain. But I only speak about 178 words a minute. Even the FedEx man that used to do the ads and speak fast, he can think faster than he can talk. So you tune in and your mind goes elsewhere. What do you think of since I said elsewhere? And most of the time your mind's going where it shouldn't go. You want me to prove what poor listeners you are? Huh? You jump ahead, you think you know where the speaker's going, you think you figured out what he's going to say before he says it after he says the first word. You want me to prove that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What time is it? It's going to play all day anyway. We can do about anything on satellite. I'll prove to you. You don't listen very good. Your mind jumps ahead. There's an old 92-year-old man and a 92-year-old woman. They went to church on Sunday. The preacher preached on Abraham and Sarah. Over 100 years old. They had a kid, Isaac. So they went to the doctor the next day and said, "We want to have a kid. We want to have a child." He said, "You can't. You're 92 and 91. You can't have a child. Don't tell us that. Our pastor yesterday told about Abraham and Sarah having a child, and they were over 100. We want a child." He couldn't talk him out of it. Finally, all I can do is test you. He gave him a little bottle with a lid on it. Says, "Give me a specimen of your semen, and I'll analyze it. See if you can have kids." You listening? Some subjects always get attention. They went in and said, "Go in that room there and give me a sample, specimen." They were in the room 2 hours. They came out with a bottle and handed it to the doctor. He looked at it and he said, "This bottle's empty." The man says, "I tried with my right hand, and I tried with my left hand. My wife tried with her right hand. She tried with her left hand. She tried with her teeth in. She tried with her teeth out. We can't get the lid off of this bottle." You're guilty, aren't you? You're guilty. You thought you knew where I was going. You're guilty. And some of them that were about asleep out there are awake now. Now get on the telephone. Oh. Conker, I was listening. You got me. San Fernando, Pastor, I'm guilty. Boise, Idaho, that was a good one. I bet you got everybody's attention. Well, everybody isn't calling, so get on the telephone. Reseda, California. Guilty as charged, Pastor. That woke me up. Just hope it woke the rest of them up out there and they call in. Culver City. Guilty, sir. That was really funny. Westwood. I'm guilty. But not guilty of not making my reservations. That was done Sunday. It's really important. You said to do it and you don't deserve to be let down. I agree. Reseda again. Thank you. I'm guilty as charged. Can't read this. It's somewhere. I have been listening all day. Pastor, you made my day. staying up to listen to that joke was worth it. Okay. You're on telephone. Well, there may be somebody that just woke up. But on rerun, there'll be people awake. And we will keep running this until the quota of reservations is in. I'll get on the telephone.